You solemnly swear the evidence you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Welcome to Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I.
Come on, Johnny, you might as well talk. Who robbed that payroll truck?
I've read the case files, have you?
This sure gives an airtight alibi.
Crime Time is heard exclusively on Biz Talk Radio. Check out podcasts of our shows or listen live at biztalkradio.com. And now, your host of Crime Time, Vito Colucci, P.I.
Good evening, everybody. Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I. on a Sunday night. What else could you possibly be doing? Instead of hearing from different topics we're covering tonight and everything like that, this is part two of a two-part series. We have our top attorney, Karen Conti, from the Chicago area. She was on last week as we talked about, Jussie Smollett. And tonight is a different thing we're doing here. Let me just read. First of all, let me welcome Karen to the show. Karen, thank you for being here.
Hi, Vito. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I'm going to start off, Karen, just by reading a little summary here of what we're talking about tonight. Okay? Ladies and gentlemen, in March, federal prosecutors in Massachusetts disclosed that it had charged 50 people who were part of a college admissions bribery scandal, which was conspiracy to influence student college admissions decisions illegally at several prominent American research universities. 33 parents of college applicants are accused of paying more than $25 million between 2011 and 2018 to a party named William Rick Singer, the organizer of the scheme. The investigation was nicknamed Operation Varsity Blues. Amazing case, right, Karen?
It really is. It was just a shock to everybody, and I think it really disrupted everybody's thinking about the way college admissions work. I mean, I think in our hearts we hope and we think that the system is fair and that it judges people based upon their qualifications, and we now see that at least at some higher levels in some areas that was not the case.
That's right. That is right. What is the nature of the charges as we're talking about that, Karen?
Well, generally, these are felony charges. They're very serious. They're in federal court, which makes them even more serious. But it's basically mail fraud and what we call honest services mail fraud, which basically it has to do with conspiracy to commit bribery in layman's terms. And each of the people who are charged a little bit differently, but those are that's the nature of what the charges are.
Okay. And how did this guy Singer, how did he get caught on this?
Well, it's an interesting story because it looks like the prosecutors were talking to somebody completely unrelated about securities fraud. And the gentleman looked doing a lot of jail time, and he said, well, could you possibly reduce my sentence if I turn you on to some bigger fraud that I'm aware of? And the prosecutors were all ears, and he turned this guy Singer over to the feds, and of course the feds then investigated it and found all of these different participants, from the parents all the way to the school admissions counselors and even some of the coaches from the teams who were participating. So it started completely unrelated and ended up in this college realm.
So we're talking about having Singer, number one. We're talking about college officials and the parents. So it seems like these three parties were the ones that really put this together.
Yeah, and I guess what I think, Vito, and I'm not sure if your listeners will think this as well, but I'm surprised it wasn't disclosed sooner, because, you know, when you have a crime, usually it's one person committing a crime or maybe two people committing a crime, and people usually shut up about the crimes they commit. But you had so many participants in this. You had numerous parents. You had the kids who may or may not have known anything about it. You have all these college people. And, you know, so you had a lot of moving parts to this crime, these crimes, and it's just kind of shocking that they all kind of kept their mouths shut for a long time.
That's right. And I know from talking to you, one of the areas of family law that you deal with is you have a lot of experience, so to speak, watching what happens when parents overmanage their children's lives. Okay? Tom and Mary Jones want to see their son be an athlete, but they want to get him into the top university. So maybe he's not that good of a player. He'll have to sit the bench, but they don't care about that. They just want him so he has a degree from one of the top universities, right?
Right, and you know what's even more interesting is, like, these families were families of money, and I'm not saying that if you come from a family with money, you don't need to go to college, but these are kids who probably were going to be taken care of anyway financially, and, you know, you look at the kids who want to go to college to better their lot in life. They may come from, you know, bad areas, or they may not have come from affluent homes, and they're trying to get into these schools like crazy, and yet the parents who have the money to pay were getting these kids in around the block. And, you know, it's interesting. They call some of these kids snowflakes, but they call this parenting snow plowing parenting, because what they do is they push their children. They cover for them. You know, if they get a bad grade, they march themselves into the high school and demand that the grade be changed. They micromanage their children's lives. And there's been books written about it. There's a great book called How to Raise an Adult by an author named Haynes, if any of your listeners are interested. And she talks about how you really do your kids a huge disservice by making their decisions and fighting their fights for them and doing things like this, which is illegal. And, you know, she almost predicted it in her book that parents would be resorting to this type of thing.
Yeah, and I had, there were several people that knew we were going to be talking about this tonight, and one of the ladies emailed me something, and she said on here, but what about the people who are saying how terrible it is that these parents didn't have the confidence in their kids' ability to succeed on their own? Let's look at this factually. Felicity Huffman paid $15,000 to a test proctor to correct her daughter's SAT. And got her an extra 400 points. And then she writes, 400 points, people. And, I mean, that kind of amazes people, 400 points on an SAT. But, you know, that people pay tons of money, thousands and thousands of dollars to get their kid. They had to get their kid into this certain school, okay? Otherwise, and a lot of the kids now are embarrassed about what their parents did. And that, you know, that was mommy and daddy's idea. That wasn't my idea.
Well, right, and among their peers, they must, if the peers know what they did, they could look at those kids and bully them and harass them. So, you know, you didn't do your kids any favor. But listen, some of this has been going on for years, and what I've heard from some of my friends are, you know what, if you have money and you want to get your kid into Yale, you donate some money for a library, or you know, there's things you can do to get your kid up on the list at Yale. And so these kinds of things have been going on in different ways, but just not as blatant as this. I mean, this was clear bribery, if the facts are what they say, when you have money exchanging hands for changed test scores, or for they're faking the kids are athletes when they really have never, you know, they're crew athletes rowing a boat and they've never rowed a boat in their life.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. This whole thing is really incredible. But like you said, see, the interesting point is you see a certain wing of the college donated by whoever. Okay, now here comes his grandchildren up the line and the whole bit, and they're like C plus kids, let's say, and they know they can't get into the college, and they get the little phone call, and that's next thing you know it. Oh man, he donated a couple million dollars to the school. He's got to go in.
Well,
so that, you know, wouldn't that be what the defense attorneys would say? Well, one doesn't have anything to do with the other. Just because my client is a grandson of people that have donated, that doesn't mean they have to put him in there, you know, something of that nature.
And add to it this, Vito, what about the people who have last names of Rockefeller or Obama? And I'm not saying those girls, I think the girl that got into Harvard got in by her own merits. Clearly, she was a very, very intelligent girl. But if your name is Obama, don't you think Harvard's going to say, hey, we'd like to have an Obama here. We'd like to have the president's daughter enrolled in our fine institution. And so is there money exchange? Is there something wrong with that? Maybe they like the diversity and the idea that they've got families who are kids from important families are at their school. It's good for their school. It's good for their reputation, so they think. And do other kids get put on the bottom of the list because of that? Maybe.
Yeah. Well, what kind of defenses do the parents have on this? You would know. You've done so many cases.
Yeah. You know, it's always good to know exactly what the facts are. But I would say the defense would be, when I was paying, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. I didn't know. I thought he was just going to get us up on the list. He told me this was a legitimate business, that he knew people there who we could talk to and try to influence them in a very professional manner. I had no idea there was going to be bribery involved and that I am innocent of these charges. I don't know how successful they're going to be honest, because it seems to me that the facts are pretty bad and the parents really knew what they were doing.
Well, this has been nicknamed Operation Varsity Blues, and that ain't no song, folks. So we're going to be right back with Karen Conti in a minute to talk. Stand by. To the next section, talking about this crazy college stuff that's going on with millions of dollars. I mean, Karen, doesn't it boggle your mind? I mean, you know, thank God both of us have done, you know, let's say good in our profession. But when they throw these kind of numbers around just to get your kid into college for a couple of years, it's amazing, huh?
It is. And, you know, most people are angered by it and aggravated and resentful. But I suppose there are some people, and I've heard a few of them saying, you know what, you'd do anything for your kid. You'd lay down for your child. And if these parents have the money, you know, maybe I would have done the same thing myself. I mean, but this is a lesson, and this is going to be an example that will be set for the future, that this is not going to be tolerated inside the schools. The parents aren't going to be expecting this. This is going to set a precedent that the admissions process has to be fair. Otherwise, there's going to be serious problems.
Well, Karen, I know I have friends and I have relatives that have come up to me. And after, I don't know how many years, 15, 20 years, are still paying off their college tuition. And how do you think they feel when daddy went in and said, you know, I want her here, but I also want all A's too, you know?
Well, and think about the child coming from a disadvantaged background. And in this country, we think if we do well in school and we get into a college, we will get a good job and then we can live the American dream and buy a home and have children and send them to college. And so that's part of our inherent makeup in this country. We know that we can pull ourselves up by the bootstrap, and the education process is the main thing that helps us do that. And I would hate for children to look at this and say, why should I even try? It's all rigged. It's all fixed. I can't do it. This is not fair. It's not a fair system, and I'm not going to even try to deal with it. I just hope that's not a message that gets sent.
Yeah, I know. Could the children be charged if they knew about their parents' conduct? That's an interesting question I have here.
They sure could. They would have to have participated in it. They would have had to have willingly conspired to do that. For instance, taking pictures of them in the crew in the boat. Mom, why are you taking pictures of me in the boat? It's because we're going to bribe the coach of the crew team. And the child goes, okay, I'll pose with you. Yes, that could happen. Now, frankly, I'm not surprised that the prosecutors have not done that, because they obviously want to pick the people who are most culpable. And I would say that an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old may not be the person that you want to blame for this. But they could do it if they wanted to, in order to set a precedent to the kids themselves not to get involved in their parents' antics.
Yeah, see, and in a case now of Felicity Huffman, her husband, William Macy, who I've seen on many movies, I really liked him. I certainly liked him in the movie Fargo quite a while ago.
He
knew all about this, and he was on at least one phone call. Why hasn't he been charged, the people want to know?
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? It seems to me in this case, from what I know, is that the mother was much more involved and that Macy was complicit in that he knew about it and they knew he knew about it because of this phone call. But my guess is also that prosecutors, they do have a heart and they don't want to overcharge. And if you charge both parents and both parents go away to jail, it's not good for the child. And my guess is that they weren't going to try to incarcerate both parents and it might have looked bad for them, a little too harsh. So they chose the one most culpable. That would be my
Yeah, I was going to ask you that about the one least most culpable or more culpable, like who made the payments, who names were on the checks. But, you know, it probably, you know yourself, probably was talked about by both parents and, you know, here's what we're going to do, take the money out of this and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that's a tough, this is going to be a crazy case as it still goes. I mean, you know, a couple people have pled guilty already, which I think was pretty smart to end, especially people that are in Hollywood, okay, to say, okay, I'm guilty, I got to move on. My career could be shot. Do you see that happening?
You're absolutely right. And we talked about that, Vito, when we talked about Jussie Smollett. You know,
right.
The best thing for him was, I mean, even if he did some jail time, that wouldn't have been as bad as ruining his career by having it drag out for a couple of years. And Felicity Huffman did an excellent job. She's going to plead guilty, they say. She issued a very beautiful apology, you know, whether you believe it and was she sincere or not. Maybe it was written by a lawyer or a PR firm. But she took responsibility for her conduct and said she was ashamed and that it's a shame that, you know, it's a bad example to set. And she said all the right things. And when she marches herself into that courtroom, the judge will take into account in sentencing that she made this apology, that she's setting an example, she's taking responsibility for her conduct, and she's saving the government a year of litigation against her. And all of those things will go into her sentence. And my guess is her sentence is going to be pretty light because of it.
Mm. Well, I've been in court so many times on cases, and of course you are on a daily basis. Do you think there's any kind of pressure, let's say, on the prosecutor's office or anything that, hey, this is a one time now to make a statement either way? Either I'm going to go to either this may be too lenient where parents feel comfortable about taking a shot again at this or facing maybe some jail time.
I think that, you know, prosecutors can, they have so much discretion, as you know. They can charge or not charge. Even if there's a crime they know about, they don't have to charge. But when they do charge, one of their goals can be to set a precedent, to stop people from, prevent and deter further crimes that are like this. So I do think they're going to ask for the highest possible sentences. I think that the people who come forward and plead guilty are going to get favorable treatment because the prosecutors are going to want to show that, hey, listen, if you own this and you agree to this, then we're going to go light on you. But the people who don't plead guilty and insist on a trial are going to pay for it. They really are. And again, you have a right to a trial. I'm not saying that you should plead guilty to something that you're not guilty of, but they have to really think about the strategy here because you're right. Prosecutors can use this as a storybook of what not to do as a parent with kids going into college.
A lot of people want to know, and you're the perfect person to ask on this, all right, Felicity Huffman is doing things one certain way, okay, but actress Lori Loughlin did not plead guilty. What do you think her strategy is? Is she smart to go to trial with this hanging over her head?
Hard to say. I'm going to
She
just
may be the example
my...
you talked about. She may be the example you talked about.
Well, here's the problem with her. In her case, there was $500,000 at issue. Supposedly, that's what she paid to a college or paid to somebody. So that amount of money drives the sentence. It, under the guidelines, and this is a little complicated, but it's interesting to know, when they prosecute you and they sentence you, it is driven largely by your criminal history. Neither of them have criminal histories. But in the case of Huffman, she paid $15,000. In the case of Lori Loughlin, she paid $500,000. Her sentence could be substantially more. I mean, it could be as much as 10 years. So she may not have the incentive to plead guilty because there may not be offering her such a sweet deal. On the other hand, you know, if she goes to trial and loses, she could be looking at serious jail time.
Okay, I hear the music in the background. We're going to part right now for a couple of minutes. And all I can see in the future within probably a year or two, a HBO movie on all of this. So stand by, everybody. back to the sound of the theme song for Hawaii 5-0 as we start our next section. Karen, and looking at all this, I'm just trying to read as I'm talking to you. What is the message for the parents? I think that we're coming away with one of those things as a very important thing here, you know?
Well, I think that first and foremost, parents set an example for their children. And as I said before, if you're making decisions for them, pushing them, fighting their battles, not letting them fail, that is a recipe for disaster. And the proof of it is in the kids are all in therapy and they're depressed and they have all kinds of issues. And listen, it's interesting. If you look this up, this is a true fact. Kids who get into these Ivy League schools do no better in their lives. They're not happier, they're not more wealthy than people who don't go to these Ivy League schools. It does make a difference for graduate school. That's a difference. So if you go to a good law school like a Yale or something like that, you might do better in the long run. But when it comes to undergraduate degrees, your child might be better going to a small liberal arts college in Iowa that serves their needs and they're happy going there. So I think parents' dreams for their children are not necessarily what's best for them. It might be what's best for the parents to say their kid goes to Yale, but children may be better off going somewhere where it's not as rigorous academic program.
That's a good point. I tell a lot of my middle-class parents that I talk to, their child wants to go into criminal justice, I'll tell them to go to Norwalk Community College or one of the community colleges, which I know have all the top players on there, judges, prosecutors, everybody that I know. Go there for your 2 years, okay? Because then you're still going to go to the top colleges, and your degree is going to be from the top college. So get all of your stuff out of the way, get your English, your math, all that stuff out of the way, and then, you know, segue into the other college for 2 years, and you got your diploma.
Exactly, you know? Right.
You know, we talked about this in the last segment, and it's going to be tough, I think. Maybe the money, like you said, one has $15,000, one has hundreds of thousands they put into this matter. How will the judge wind up determining a sentence? Is it going to be one-on-one where one person's pleading not guilty, who's going to get clobbered if she's found guilty?
Yeah, so the judge looks at culpability, and certainly this guy Singer, who was the mastermind, is probably going to be hit the hardest because he was the one who was profiting from all of it, and he was the one who came up with the whole program, including the parents and the college people. I think second, the college people are going to be prosecuted, and they're extremely culpable. Their jobs, largely, were to be charged with having a fair admissions process, and they took that responsibility and that duty to children and to parents all over the country and to their college and to their university, and they basically threw it in the garbage can. So those people are going to be prosecuted very harshly, in my view. The parents, it's going to be driven by, you know, how much money they pay. That's really how the sentencing guidelines work. So if it's a certain amount of money, there's a certain range. And it's also they're going to get credit for taking responsibility, for apologizing, and for hopefully showing remorse in what they've done. So that scale could be anywhere, you know, in the no jail time to all the way to 20 years. I mean, it's that big a range.
Now, you know, I'm thinking about this, and I'm wondering, what's this about the civil side that I hear? There's lawsuits that have been brought already. By whom and for what?
Well, there's a bunch of them, and one of them was brought by students who actually got into one of the Ivy League schools saying that now you've basically polluted our degree, so that it used to be worth a lot, but now everyone is going to know that someone could buy admissions here, and that admission was bought and it wasn't earned, and therefore my degree is not worth what I'm paying for it. So that's one set of lawsuits. Another set of lawsuits is a group of class action plaintiffs who say, we applied to a school, we didn't get in to Yale, and we didn't get into Yale because you were fixing the process, and as a result, I got into a lesser school, and I'm probably not going to do as well. So there's those lawsuits as well. And then there's the kids who just say, I am guaranteed a fair admissions process. I took the test. I paid $100 for the entrance fee to try to get into the school. I wasn't given a fair shot. I should get my entrance fee back. And that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but if you're talking about millions of students who've applied to all these schools, that could be a lot of money we're talking about.
Okay, but let's talk for a minute about the kids that are now juniors and seniors that got in an illegal way, let's say through mommy and daddy's pocketbook. Do they have to leave the college, or how will this reflect on them? Will that, even if they don't even know, well, I didn't know any of this was going on. I hate my parents for doing this. You know, will they have to leave the college like junior year or if they're in that?
You know, that's really interesting in how they're going to handle that, because I'm sure the colleges are going to say, the kids didn't do anything. Why yank them out of the school? They're in the school. As long as they're doing well, we're going to let them stay. But I would imagine if there are any students who have been admitted but not, they didn't start yet, they might revoke that admission, and they probably should, because it was based upon fraud. And I think they would have a definite right to do that.
I also think there'd be a lot of bullying going on by kids that worked their heart out for years to get in there, and daddy and mommy that just was barely able to squeeze by to get you in there. A lot of kids are not going to like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that could, I mean, if I were a child and I'm in school and everybody knows that my daddy cheated to get me in, I wouldn't want to be there. I just want to crawl up in a corner somewhere. You know how kids are. Kids are much more, you know, susceptible to their peers' pressure. And at a time in college when you're supposed to be having fun and socializing and learning about different people and so, you know, different being in different groups and sororities and dorms and things like that, that would ruin the whole experience.
Two things. How long do you think this will go on? I'm talking about, now I know, you know, one case will be solved quicker than others. Somebody will plead guilty. But you got a lot of people over here. And I'm just wondering, how long will it take to finish this whole thing up? You know, and how much money would it cost, truthfully, the taxpayers?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I say that, you know, the federal court system works pretty quickly, and this is going on in Massachusetts, which is a pretty good court over there. And so my guess is that stuff is going to be wrapped up in about a year, or maybe just a little over a year. So those who are going to trial, obviously, they have to get ready, and there's all kinds of procedures and preparations, and the trial will then, you know, involve a jury. And there'll probably be appeals afterwards. So all in all, you know, probably most of it will be done in a year, save the appeals.
Yeah, it's amazing because you can think back. I know for me how many years I've always heard, you know, hey, whatever happened to Tommy Jones? Oh, Tommy just, you know, graduated this college. And what? Really? Yeah, he got his master's here and a whole. But yeah, but where'd he get the money from? You know where he got the money from. And for many years we have heard that. And finally, it all really came to a crescendo over here with this. I mean, in a way, it doesn't surprise a lot of people because it had to happen. I'm just surprised it took so many years for it to really get to this point.
Oh, right. And this could have been done on a one-on-one level, you know, where some rich person goes into the college and cuts a deal with the person directly. But this was so unusual because it was like a whole system. It was a whole procedure that they had, and they had all these people on board with the procedure, and it was quite a racket, you know. It was quite a thing, and it probably didn't sprout overnight. This has probably been going on for years in one way, shape, or form.
And somebody here wants to know, what about the colleges? What about the baseball coach that was handed a lot of money to put little Tommy, accept him there, people that took money, SATs? I haven't heard too much about that, and this person wants to know, what happens to all these people that took a bribe?
Oh, they're all charged. They're all going to be charged. And like I said before, I think they're extremely culpable. These are people who are in charge of children, in charge of admissions, in charge of making children good adults and being a good role model for them. And I think the prosecutors should come down very, very hard on them because they've basically put into question the admissions process for all schools, not just the good ones. I'm sure there are parents out there saying, what about the state school? Do I even have a chance? Because I'm not paying money to the athletic coach. Do I even have a chance to get my child in there? And it's a horrible thought that parents are thinking that way.
Right. It's just so incredible. This case, I think we're going to see it around for a long time. I think we will talk about it again later on as things get more, let's say, juicy. on the case.
And watch it. We're going to have legislation to make this process more transparent. I think we're going to see schools have an internal investigative probe so that they are constantly looking for these kinds of things. And I think we're going to just see the reasons why people are rejected. We're going to have to, the parents are going to demand to know who's being accepted, who's not being accepted, and why. And I don't know that that's a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hear the music in the background, so we have to take a break before we come to the last segment here. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Progress. 1 Adam 12, handle code 3.
We are listening to the theme song from Adam 12, a gigantic program that was on for many years. Very high ratings, and the people just took to these guys. We are back with Karen Conti talking about this fiasco, if I can say that, with the colleges and everything else. I'm just looking at my notes over here, see which way to go here to finish this up. There's so many different things going on here. The whole helicopter parenting, that's new words that have led to this type of behavior. Have you heard of that before?
Oh yeah, and it's just a huge phenomenon, and you know, it part of growing up, if we remember, is falling down and skinning our knee and taking care of ourselves, making mistakes, not getting picked for the softball team, being rejected for a job interview. You know, all of those things in life make you a better person and a stronger person. And what helicopter parenting, in the worst sense, does is it protects the child from all of these things with the idea that you're going to save your child the heartache of all these mistakes and these issues. When in fact, what it does is it causes them not to be able to handle even the slightest problems in life. And, you know, I have a radio show in Chicago, as you know, and I asked my listeners when this first came up, I said, what is the most, you know, serious breach that you've ever committed for your child? Like, have you done their homework? Have you done their high school science project yourself with your glue gun? And parents were calling in saying, oh my gosh, you know, I did my son's algebra test, I wrote his entire paper, I wrote this, I wrote that, and, you know, and these parents were just, like, apologizing for it, but said, you know what, he got a good grade, and that's going to get him into a better college, and that's worth it for me to do something dishonest. And I was very surprised that so many parents had crossed over that line, right?
Oh, it's a new regime. The parenting, and I'm not saying this bad for everybody, but there are some people out there that maybe when they grew up, they didn't have anything or whatever. They couldn't do anything. Now they have a lot of money, let's say. They're able to do whatever they want. And little Bobby never has to pay for anything. And what I mean by pay for anything, even a thing like if he's in second grade and he's got some bad grades, the parents are going to storm in there and yell at the teacher. That's changed over the years. So even in baseball, people will differ with me for what I say. I coached baseball for many, many years. Everybody gets a participation trophy. I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay with nobody getting first place after you played all season and you made it to first place and most valuable player. That shouldn't be. Because now you're saying, well, my son will cry if he doesn't get this or that. Well, what's he going to do when he's passed over in his job as an adult, you know?
And you have to learn to fight your own battles. And you also have to learn to respect authority. And I do see not everybody, but some of the young people coming through as lawyers now that I'm hiring are just, they don't respect that I've been practicing law for 33 years. You don't have to like me. You don't have to like the way I do things. But listen, I've been around for 33 years. I know what I'm doing. You're not going to try a case the first day out of law school. You have to wait your turn. You have to earn your stripes. You have to prove that you know what you're doing, and you've got to work hard. And nothing is going to be handed to you, and you've got to be out there every day hitting the pavement, hitting the books, and doing your job. And I think a lot of children who grew up through that helicopter parenting, don't have the ability to do that and feel like they're entitled in some ways to be handed yet another prize, whatever that might be. And that's sad.
Right.
I'm not mad at them. I was mad at first, but now I feel sad for them because they don't know how to, they don't know how to cope.
They got to know who the boss is. I see that on the police departments. I see that in jobs.
Yes.
And each section. Let me ask you one question over here about going back to this William Rick Singer. We've let him off a little bit here. Singer faces up to 65 years in prison and a fine of $1.25 million. I think they should clobber him for being one of the ringleaders of this, right?
They should. You know, I don't know if 65 years is the right sentence. You know, sentencing is just a hard thing. I mean, this guy is going to go to jail. He's going to do a lot of years, is my guess. He's going to learn his lesson. He's going to set an example. But I guess I always look at the positive side, even though I work in a profession that's not always positive, that because of this, we're all more aware now of the problems and the issues. And I'm not saying that I'm glad this happened, but I'm glad that I know this happened. And when we see these people going to jail and they're leaving their families, it's not going to be easy. It's not easy on the families. It's not easy on the loved ones. And I'm not saying I've got a lot of sympathy for people who do this, but you know that this is going to ruin quite a few lives.
Right. I can't believe going back to my opening on this, where Felicity Huffman paid that money for the SATs for her daughter, and it went up 400 points. I mean, how can you bring up something 400 points? I guess she must have been very, very low to have to get 400 points for $15,000.
And I think a lot of your listeners out there are going to be saying to themselves, and listen, this girl grew up in the lap of luxury. This girl grew up with parents who probably make, what, $10 to $15 million a year. These parents could have gotten them the best tutors. The parents themselves are probably very bright people. They probably went to the best schools. They probably had the best training, the best preparatory programs. And, you know, they had all the advantages in life. And so they got one, you know, they were trying to get one more for their kids. And again, it's just, is it the parents' pride? Is it the parents substituting their own wishes for the child? Is it a right of bragging to be able to say my kid got into Stanford? And, you know, it's just the whole thing is wrong and the whole thing is sad.
Yeah, and also how about the stars themselves, the William Macy's of the world and everything like that, that are in, let's say, all the time with people of their own class, you know, the millions and millions of dollars. Don't you think that people are going to be talking and say, well, my kid got in legitimately. My kid got into Stanford on their own thing. You had to pay money. You had to do this. You had to do that. And it goes on and on because that's very important to these Hollywood stars and business CEOs. Well, we got called here that we were going to the end here. I want to thank you, Karen Conti, again from Chicago. Anybody need a good attorney, please look her up in Chicago. She is one of the best. And questions, just call her up. You can find her online.
You,
okay, Karen, thank you. It's been
all
very
right.
Enjoyable. We'll talk to you soon.
Nice talking
good
to
night,
you.
Everybody.
Take care.
All right. Good night, everybody.